Nutella, the chocolatey hazelnut spread and a pride of the Italian food industry, is seeing another Italian rival infringe on its turf. That's Barilla, best known, of course, for its pasta and sauces in classic blue packaging. Barilla's planning to launch a chocolate spread of its own, according to Reuters sources, in a direct attack on Nutella.
It's the ad that killed a fashion show. Dolce & Gabbana on Wednesday canceled its marquee runway exhibition in Shanghai after an online uproar over what social media users called a racist ad. After the backlash, the company simply said the show was, quote, rescheduled due to reasons.
Amazon has taken over the retail world with algorithms and free shipping. For this holiday shopping season, retailers have upped their online game and are ready to compete with Amazon in a way they haven't been before. Take Target, for instance. It's been pouring money into online operations and reaping the benefit. Online sales at the discount retailer surged 49% last quarter on top of double-digit sales gains all year.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's November 26th and 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for joining us on this snowy morning in Chicago. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving and a great Thanksgiving break. Well, we're back at it today as we start another business week and another business day. Lots going on this morning. Of course, we'll keep you posted on the weather and all of the news surrounding that throughout the Opening Bell this morning. Vic Vaughn will be in the newsroom. Mary Vandeveld is on traffic today, and we'll keep you posted on the weather as well. The Emergency Closing Center is open, so you can get school closings there and cancellations and delays and what have you. So blustery, snowy, blizzard type of a morning around the area today. But lots of people getting back at it, getting back to work today with Monday after the holiday. And we'll check with later how things are going on the roads and in weather. So don't worry about missing any of that as we begin the Opening Bell today. We put together a good broadcast for you coming back. Doug Roth is here, the founder and CEO of Playground Hospitality. We're going to be talking about eating out at restaurants at the holiday time. Doug will give us some advice about that and some of his thoughts as we begin this Monday and the full holiday now as we count down to Christmas. A little bit later in the program, A.J. LaTrace will be here, the real estate reporter and editor at Curbed Chicago. We're going to be talking about Pullman's Renaissance and how new industrial development and investment helping that South Side neighborhood. That'll be at about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward a strong opening later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures up more than 1% this morning. Same story for the S&P and NASDAQ. Around the globe, markets are generally mixed, with the markets in Europe trying to edge into the green in France, where it's lower by about 0.5%, but higher in Germany and in London. And in Asia this morning, markets are generally higher. The Nikkei is going to end the day up about 0.75%, the Hang Seng higher, and the Shanghai is lower. Oil is trading at $51.01 a barrel. So I bet you're wondering how Black Friday was. The latest statistics from Adobe Analytics says Black Friday pulled in a record $6.22 billion in online sales. The Friday after Thanksgiving this year was also the first day in history to see more than $2 billion in sales stemming from just smartphones, from using smartphones. Cyber Monday sales today are expected to set a new record of $7.8 billion. With that being up nearly 18% from last year. So we'll be monitoring Cyber Monday today as we begin the work week. Wall Street welcoming the new start of a trading week after stocks suffered their worst Thanksgiving week decline in 8 years. All three major indices dropped more than 3% last week, surrounded by a sharp decline in technology shares and falling oil prices. Speaking of oil prices, they're recovering from those losses on Friday. International benchmark crude is up about 43 cents a barrel. General Motors is planning a big announcement today that'll impact its global operations. It could also involve the shutdown of a large factory in Ontario, Canada. A Canadian Auto Workers Union says it has been told that no more vehicles will be made at the Oshawa plant in 2019. The plant has been in operation since 1953 and is current home to production lines for the Cadillac XTS, the Chevrolet Impala, and the Chevrolet Silverado. The GMC Sierra also made there. We begin front and center this morning with Doug Roth, the founder and CEO of Playground Hospitality. Conversation about restaurants and restaurant trends. Doug, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thanks very much. Let me ask you a question, Steve.
Yes.
How much of the weekend did you sleep?
I didn't sleep a lot, but I ate a lot. I had a couple doggy bags, plenty of stuff left over in the refrigerator. How did you fare?
I think I'm still asleep.
Yeah.
A lot of turkey.
A lot of turkey.
And gosh, I love turkey. I mean, that can be a 24/7, 365 for me.
Is it, what is it called, tryptophan? Is that the ingredient in turkey that makes you sleepy?
Yes.
Like that?
Yeah. Yes, and I think I got a slow drip of that for the last weekend.
A lot of people went out for Thanksgiving dinner this year. I know we talked about this trend last year, but it's one that continued and appears to be growing this year.
Big time. We are actually, I would say, part of that group. It may be something as part of the new wave of what's happening in the restaurant world. As technology has affected it as well, also carry out, carry in. In our case, we went out, and 10% of Americans this year went out, and also in addition to that, 4% carried in. That's a huge number when you consider that $61 billion is spent on Thanksgiving every year. So I think there's a lot of reasons behind why people are going out as well.
What would those reasons be if you had to make a guess, if you had to do an informal poll? Would it be the ease of doing it, not having to cook for everybody, or is there something more at play there, something bigger at play?
Well, I could joke about it and say that people don't want to be with their families as much as they normally do, and you have a set period of time at dinner. But and in all actuality, I think what's happened is that people want to enjoy each other, and they are able to do it that way. No one's necessarily held responsible, and you get a great opportunity to go to some great restaurants that also are offering some great prices that normally aren't necessarily offered during the regular part of the year. I think people are traveling a lot, and I think there's just a sense of ease, as you said before. Mm-hmm. I think the desire really to say, let's let mom or grandma or dad hang up the pots and pans, and let's all go out, and let's make it right this year.
How much does ambiance and tradition play into this, too? Because I can think of a couple of places in Chicago to go out and eat. The Drake is one of them, where you just sit in the giant ornate room and there's the ambiance. And then there's tradition. I like to go to the Walnut Room still and see the Christmas tree and have lunch with my sister and get some chicken pot pie. Tradition's a big part of it, too, isn't it?
I think more this year than ever. I think that we've seen, and nor do we necessarily need to reflect, but we know that we are in some difficult times in many ways. And I think when that happens, there's nothing like going back in one's lives. I was sharing with Jonathan, who's joined me today, about the traditions that we had growing up. My father, as we've discussed before, owned the Blackhawk, and we would go down to the Blackhawk, have a great dinner on a Sunday night, and then walk and take a look at the wonderful tree decorations as well as the windows. At that time, it was Marshall Field's, and now Macy's still continues that tradition as well. And there's something about that, something about, as you said, about those traditions and not losing that in one's mind at this point and being able to continue with those with our children, our grandchildren, and moving forward so that they're not forgotten. Because I think it really, without sounding corny, it really is heartwarming. And it really does give us a feeling of the season. And also, in addition to that, makes us feel like kids again.
And we're talking about what happened previously on Thanksgiving. But this is through the holiday season, a lot of the restaurants that we're talking about, a lot of the things that we're talking about, this is going to be a regular occasion over the holidays up until Christmas and New Year's. All of these restaurants have special holiday menus out. So it's not something that if you missed it on Thanksgiving that you're going to not be able to take advantage of.
Very true. What's interesting is that many of the hotels and restaurants, as you said, are offering special holiday menus. A couple reasons behind that. One is that it's easier if you have a holiday menu to execute that menu when you have all these people who are coming in and out of your restaurant, especially in the downtown area, also in the River North area, North Michigan Avenue area, because what happens is that your dining times expand. Many people are on vacation. So what historically had been lunchtime from 11:30 to 1 now goes all day. So you have to be prepared, as we say in the business, prepped with food for that particular time. And what you do is you provide special menus that allow you to serve those people with great food, but be able to control the portions, the sizes, and the timing so that you're able to get those people in and out of your restaurants.
What would a menu like that look like if you were making the perfect menu? What would it be? Roast turkey, or other things?
Sure, roast turkey, ham, in addition to that, prime rib, items that you can cook ahead and hold. It's those items that we say that a la minute that have to be made immediately are the more difficult ones. So you sort of scatter those in the menu. And they're also festive items as well. So it works both for you, the guests, and also for the restaurant or the hotel as well.
You mentioned earlier that some restaurants are going to be having better prices for the holidays. How, is the holidays generally a slow time for the restaurant business?
Well, not the restaurant business per se. No, this is when normally you can make up to 33% of your annual gross revenue for restaurants. But restaurants that are in hotels, that becomes a little bit more challenging. So the hotel rooms up until about Christmas or so have done pretty well with a lot of people coming in for the weekends. But your convention business is gone, and most people are in their homes. So what they do, or hotels have done, is to give you the idea of two things. One is coming down, experiencing a great meal at a great hotel at a very affordable price, usually under $50 sometimes per person for a holiday meal. The other is having great room rates, because again, who's necessarily staying on the property at this point? So it gives us the opportunity to do a staycation, and that's something that we have done before in the past, and also have chosen cities near Chicago that it's a great time to go to a lot of these great cities and experience them in the wintertime during the holidays.
Let's talk a little bit about the going to the restaurants at the holiday season. I know you and I have talked before about the do's and the don'ts of not only the wait staff, but also you as the patron of the restaurant. Should we expect to have table times turning over, longer turnover time for tables, so people are sitting and having longer conversations with their family and spending more time? Should we be tipping more? Should we be a little bit more patient with the wait staff? Should everything be perfect from the serving side of it? What kinds of special things do we take into account at the holidays?
Well, interestingly enough, you're right. There are a lot of things that aren't transpiring. What I read was that Thanksgiving has become more popular for people going out than Mother's Day. And what happens is, with Mother's Day and Thanksgiving, you're with family and you have high expectations.
Yeah.
It's my family, or in the other case, it's my mother. I want everything to be perfect. And it's not going to be. So I think what we need to do is realize we have also our servers who are working with us, the management. Listen, where would they rather be during the holidays? They'd rather be home, I'm sure. But they have chosen, or they have been obviously asked, to work that day. And so I think it's a time when we need to step back, especially as we talked about earlier, as we think about tradition and things of that sort. And yes, I think giving a greater gratuity, or that little small act of kindness, you know, having that server look at that bill because you were able to give a little bit more money than they were ever expecting,
yeah,
and that smile on their face, it goes a really long way. I think, yes, you're going to see at times maybe restaurants are going to honor reservations, but maybe they're going to go over a little bit more than they should. And again, a good restaurant's going to know how to control that. But I think it's a time when we all sort of give everyone a little slack.
How do restaurants control that part of it? Do they know to space out reservations at the holidays a little bit longer?
Especially with OpenTable and other reservation systems, you have the ability in the restaurant, which a lot of people don't know, to figure out and to plot, as we say, tables of 4, 5, 6, and even lower numbers as well. And you are advised as to where they are as far as their meal and being able to slot in people and move people out and things of that sort. Same thing happens, believe it or not, if you send something back to the kitchen. You beg, borrow, and steal. And I think we've talked about this as well in restaurants. If a steak happened to have been overdone, and we talked about there's nothing wrong with sending it back the last time we spoke, they're going to grab a steak that's from someone else's order and then hopefully serve it that way too versus everyone having to wait at the table too. But you know, we try to do things at this point to be as hospitable as we can be. But everyone's under a lot of pressure to make it right for you.
Maybe have an extra holiday drink at the dinner table as well to ease the stress a little.
Why not?
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that a big part of the holiday season, Thanksgiving, which we just passed, was takeout. How is that? Is that catering or is catering separate from that? Is takeout, because do you consider those different things? Or are they measured differently?
Well, yes. I mean, catering would actually be a company here in Chicago, for instance, the Hardy Boys, which is a catering company, would actually come into your house and would prepare Thanksgiving for you and would either just provide the meal for you or actually would go as far as having servers, if you had a large group of people, for that particular event. And that's a whole different area right now that, again, is seeing a huge increase in people having catered Thanksgivings. Mm-hmm. But there's also as easy of going to Boston Market, and they're part of a delivery service, as we've seen today with four or five or six different delivery companies that are out there that are delivering products from different restaurants. So it could be Boston Market all the way up to Joe's Stone Crab that will be delivering product to you for your Thanksgiving. And remember, not everyone loves turkey, so there are others out there that might want diversity in their Thanksgiving, and that allows you to do it as well.
The delivery part of this is really kind of cool. Again, it's not necessarily the restaurants that are doing this, but it's the Grubhubs and the those organizations that are making the deliveries and going and getting it. I remember a time when if you wanted to go eat at one of these fancy restaurants, you had to get a reservation, and if you didn't get a reservation, you didn't eat there. But now you can order something and have it picked up and delivered to you. That's kind of cool.
Well, it's a win-win because what's happened, obviously, is that you have the restaurant who obviously has clientele that's there. And then on the other side, you have individuals that have made a conscious decision to stay home, hang out, and want a quality dining experience. So it's a win for you in the sense that you don't have to go out, but you get a quality product. At the same time, it's a win for the restaurant. So it works on both. What I can't figure out yet is, and we started this years ago with a company called Room Service that was actually started by the gentleman who started Potbellies, Brian Kyle. And Room Service was exactly what we're talking about. They had trucks around. They had guys in tuxedos. But the numbers just never worked for us. And I'm dying to understand further how the numbers work for the restaurants and the Grubhubs of the world. I'm not sure if it's a great buy or a wonderful short.
Yeah, it's. I'm not even going to try to go into that because I think you're right there. It's kind of hard to understand. Doug, I have to tell you, I know we've been talking about fancy food generally, but one of my new favorite things is a Subway sandwich that has a sub sandwich that has the turkey, the stuffing, the cranberry spread, mayonnaise, and an Italian bun. What is it that's so good about that combination of food together in a sandwich? Why is that so?
Well, be it a sandwich or be it a meal, I think we were talking about earlier that personally turkey can be every day for myself. I think, again, it harkens back to, again, when we're younger. I mean, when we used to have that fabulous ham sandwich or we had again, turkey leftovers for, you know, days. And be careful that it's no more than days, especially right, you want to make sure you take it off the bone for those of you that haven't done it already. So I think what it is, it's full of food that really fills and satisfies your soul. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what this time is about, especially living here in Chicago when we've been experiencing unusually cool temperatures, so to speak. So it also, again, I think it brings up great memories, and that memories along with the taste and just the feel of having sweet potatoes with marshmallows as we did and will continue to have for the next few weeks is great stuff. And those sandwiches just make you feel good.
Yeah, transported back. I know with me, sometimes it feels like I'm transported back to my grandmother's kitchen, you know, the day after Thanksgiving with her making a white bread sandwich or, as you mentioned, the sweet potatoes, and you just have such great memories with food.
Really do. Yeah. I think one thing that I want to bring up about tradition again is that, and I think you and I have chatted about this, and maybe Jonathan can chime in on this for a second, is that one thing we don't want to forget are those troops that are out there today that are away from their homes, but also in addition to those that are training at different facilities within your listening audience. And when I was growing up, it wasn't unusual for us to have members of the military join us for the holidays. And that's a tradition that still exists. And I think it's a wonderful thing and a wonderful way of giving back to the men and women at this point that aren't able to be with their families.
You've mentioned Jonathan a couple of times. Why don't you introduce Jonathan and we'll bring him into the conversation.
All right. Well, I'm going to let Jonathan introduce himself. Jonathan is my son, 26, who's currently serving as an officer in the United States Coast Guard. But I will let him tell who he is, because that's what fathers have to do today and mothers have to do today, is let their children speak for themselves.
Hi, Jonathan. Welcome.
Thanks for having me this morning.
And congratulations. I understand you just got a promotion as well.
I did.
Yes. So tell us what you do in the Coast Guard.
So in the Coast Guard, I work down in the western coast of Florida doing a number of different jobs. One of them is maritime law enforcement. Another is marine environmental protection. And another is search and rescue coordination.
Talk to me about the tradition your dad was mentioning about it's obviously great that you're home for the holidays, but a lot of people can't get home for the holidays. Why is it important to continue this tradition of inviting people who are in the service into your home?
That's absolutely correct. I know all across the country and across the world, there are members that aren't able to be with their families, whether they're deployed or going through a basic training or indoctrination program. And certainly for some of those members that are brand new into the military, haven't been maybe away from home ever before, they're in a very challenging program that is a introduction for them into the military. There are a couple of days where they can get away from it all. And if they can't be with their own family, then I know there's lots of wonderful families out there where service members can go out into the community and have a great meal, a great discussion, and just a little bit of a break.
I was remembering back to a dinner that I was at where members of the service came. It's sometimes done in a pretty fancy way. They show up in their dress blues or their dress uniforms, and it's a kind of very fancy, formal thing. You know, by the end, their pants are probably unbuttoned, and they've probably, you know, overeaten, but it's a cool feeling to see the members of the service there.
Absolutely. I know it's certainly a privilege for anyone that is able to do it. I know the service members don't expect it. You know, they're in it to serve, and it's just if the community is willing to support them, which in many times they are, it's something that we can certainly be very thankful for.
Doug, I know that you're always giving back to the community and helping, but the holiday season is a time where that becomes really front and center, doesn't it, for all of us? Do what you can to help the community, give back in some way.
Well said. I mean, I believe that, yes, it should be 365, but now more than ever, in some sort of way, and I call it small acts of kindness. It could be leaving that $100 tip on a $50 meal. Yeah. And if you're able to do that, I'm not saying that it could be $5 on $1 or whatever it may be, that you know that you have made a difference. And I think that's the big thing that I feel right now is, in whatever way, how can you make a small difference in someone else's life that is going to be something that isn't going to change your life, but may change someone else's life? And without being too philosophical about it, at a really great time of the year, you know, think about it from the standpoint either in your church, your synagogue, or whatever way it may be, that you take a look at how you can just make a difference. And that's what I continue to try to impart upon my own children and what I call my bonus daughter, 2.0. And I think that's what we have to think about today and over the holidays especially. And besides, it just makes you feel good. It makes you think about Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jonathan, it's good to meet you. Thanks for coming in with your dad today.
Thanks for letting me tag along today.
Yeah, absolutely. And Doug, we're always very thankful that you're our restaurant expert here on the show. We wish you both all the best for the holiday season.
And we wish you the best. And look forward to talking about what's ahead for 2019. It could be an interesting flyover, or we're going to have to fasten our seatbelts.
Lovely. Well, we'll see you next time.
Real good. Bye-bye.
Doug Roth is the founder and CEO of Playground Hospitality. You can find him online at playgroundhospitality.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Uber will be able to add hundreds of wheelchair-accessible vehicles to its platform across 6 markets, including in Chicago. The goal is to ensure riders who rely on wheelchairs can get rides when they need them and without having to wait more than 15 minutes. Inc. magazine revealed the 50 most innovative cities in the world, and Chicago came in at number 11. It was behind only Boston, LA, New York, and Silicon Valley in the U.S. Tokyo took number 1 overall spot. And Chicago startup Health iPass has raised $10 million in new funding. The company helps healthcare providers bring price transparency to patients. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Glad to have you along. We want to turn our focus now to the Pullman neighborhood on the south side of Chicago, where a new industrial development and some reinvestment from the National Park Service are helping to rejuvenate that neighborhood. And joining us this morning is A.J. LaTrace, who writes for Chicago Magazine and Curbed Chicago. And he has been writing about this. AJ, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
I'm glad to have you here this morning because we saw your piece in Chicago Magazine at chicagomag.com. And some of the renderings of what is going on down in Pullman are just amazing. Some of these renderings of what will be there eventually are pretty cool.
Yeah, so those renderings were actually designed by the firm Adrian Smith and Gordon Gill, very high-profile local Chicago firm here that mostly does these kind of mega-tall skyscrapers around the world. It's from a document called Positioning Pullman, and some of the things that are seen, may be some years away, but basically what it does highlight is the fact that, the former historic district there in Pullman is getting some new investment from the National Park Service. There's, quite a bit of industrial development surrounding it. So Pullman in the coming years is going to look potentially a lot different, but it's also kind of leading the charge for sort of this newer wave of, perhaps sustainable and green industrial development.
Yeah, the photograph, the image that I focused in on there was the Pullman Clock Tower. Work on that, actual restoration on that, is going to begin pretty soon.
Yeah, it's already underway. Workers are currently restoring the roof of that building. But yeah, anyone who's visited Pullman, it's a very striking building. It's the former headquarters of the Pullman Company. It's the administrative and clock tower building. It was actually nearly lost back in 98 from an arson attack. And the National Park Service has taken over. It's going to become the new visitor center for the National Monument, which is now about 3 years old.
The larger vision for Pullman, if everything goes according to plan, will look like what, AJ, in the coming years or maybe even the coming decade? And how will it impact that neighborhood?
Yeah, so, the story that I've been following in the last several years, as you probably know, is just the overall investment and the sort of very dynamic and rapid growth of the real estate scene in Chicago. And over the last several years, I mean, there's been a lot of focus on downtown. There's been a lot of focus on the West Loop, the Milwaukee Avenue corridor. But, you know, there's quite a bit changing in Pullman. And, you know, there's a reason for it. The location near rail, near public transit, near the highway, it's actually closer to Indiana than it is downtown Chicago. But there's also a lot of vacant land left, and you know it's a good area, very conducive area to, you know, logistics and some heavy industry. You know, in the coming years, we're going to see some newer projects. Like for example, there's a produce supplier called Gotham Greens. They're currently working to build a new greenhouse in Pullman. I believe it'll be 140,000 square feet. And anyone who's driven past the Pullman area will see a wind turbine out there, and that's for the Method Soap Factory. So there's been some significant investment in the last few years, and it seems to be. Seems that it will continue in the coming years.
Yeah, and it's not just the industrial part of this. It's not just companies moving in. There's some housing development underway there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, so there's a new development called the Pullman Art Space Lofts, and that's going to be in the historic district, and it's going to be, I believe, the first new residential development in decades, specifically in the historic district. But that'll be 38 units developed and set aside for artist housing. And the thing that's kind of interesting about it is that it's going on Langley Street, sort of in this vacant parcel between two existing buildings. But the actual sort of design architecture will speak the same language as the old Pullman row houses, so it'll be a brand new development, but it'll look like it belongs in Pullman.
When it's said and done, I know your story talks about the total investment being close to $300 million. How important to all of that is the centerpiece, which is the park part of this, the national park part of this?
Yeah, some of the people that I've talked with have said that the National Park Service, you know, it's kind of been sort of like a perfect recipe for investment and, you know, new interest in Pullman. There's a group down that's based in Pullman called the Chicago Neighborhood Initiative. It's led by a guy named David Doig. And, you know, his group has really been involved and active in a lot of the sort of, you know, private and industrial development. They've also been working with the National Park Service as well. And so it's kind of amazing because you've got the National Park Service, the state of Illinois, local stakeholders, and, you know, local private investment all sort of, you know, linking arms and working together to make this happen. And, you know, the interesting thing about the National Park Service, and I spoke with the superintendent of the Pullman National Monument, and she made a really interesting point. You know, she said that the National Park Service is in the forever business. You know, they're not going to come in and you know, turn a quick buck. I mean, they're going to be here indefinitely. So, so that presence will stick around and stay. And, you know, of course, the National Park Service is kind of, you know, it's in the business of education and you know, history and maintaining, you know, culturally and historically important, significant sites in our country. But it is kind of amazing to see how, you know, there are a lot of gears in motion, and that's just one of them.
In the wake of the Amazon decision, the HQ2 decision, a lot of people have been talking about using the money that was promised to Amazon and the incentives promised to Amazon for a local reinvestment. Boy, this sure has reinvestment, and this would probably be a really good recipient of some of that, some of those incentives, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly would. I mean, you know, and sort of the irony is, I'm sure you may have heard or seen recently that Target plans on closing a store in Chatham and sort of pulling out of the South Side, which is completely, you know, counterintuitive to what Chicago needs right now. And, you know, the thing that's interesting about Pullman is, you know, I spoke with Alderman Beal, and, you know, he was saying that one of his goals is to meet with the next mayor of Chicago and sit down and try to get all the different aldermen, you know, surrounding his ward involved, and to talk about, you know, getting together and producing a comprehensive development plan for the far South Side and West Side. And, you know, certainly what's been happening in Pullman could be, you know, some definitely a you know, framework or an example to point to and, you know, how to bring sort of that mix of industrial and public funds to the South Side.
AJ, thanks for being with us this morning. Great conversation. And we're going to link out to your story online and with social media and the podcast of the show later this morning. But we appreciate you getting up with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Steve.
AJ LaTrace, who writes for Chicago Magazine and Curb Chicago, and you can read his latest, Pullman's Renaissance, at chicagomag.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are up nearly 1% this morning across the board on the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P. Dow futures up nearly 262 points. NASDAQ futures up more than 100 points this morning as well, for almost 1.5%. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, after the holiday weekend comes news that construction work has begun in central Michigan on a $555 million dairy processing plant that will have the capacity to process 250% of the milk produced in Michigan each year. The Lansing State Journal reports Irish food and nutrition company Glanbia back in August announced plans for a cheese plant in St. John's, Michigan. The project also includes an adjacent facility belonging to Iowa-based Proliant Dairy Ingredients. The facility will employ more than 250 people, although local officials believe it could generate an additional 600 jobs. The plant projected to produce 300 million pounds of cheese annually. But probably the most watched meeting this week will be in Buenos Aires, Argentina, November 29 and 30. The G20 meeting, where the presidents of China and the United States are expected to discuss trade issues. I'm Orion Samuelson. You have a great day.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, November the 26th. The spotlight is on home sales and home prices this week. Tomorrow we'll bring the home price index from Kay Schiller and the Federal Housing Finance Agency, along with consumer confidence for November. New home sales for October will be out Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, the second estimate for the third quarter GDP. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell will speak to the Economic Club of New York. And on Thursday of this week, October's pending home sales index is due out, along with personal income and spending, as well as a weekly look at first-time unemployment claims. So, as usual, lots to move the markets potentially this week. Today, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index is out, the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey. It is also Cyber Monday. We'll be watching retail stocks, including Amazon, Walmart, Macy's, Target, and others, for not just the results from a good Black Friday, but Cyber Monday beginning today. Just some of the things that could move the markets for November the 26th.